Hello, welcome to another exciting episode of Hack Republic Radio. My name is Dan Washko, and I'm continuing my series of the Linux startup or boot process today with episode 2B, or actually 3, whatever you want to call my episode on grub. And no, I'm not talking about those tasty little beetle larvae that a lot of countries find very nutritious and supplement their protein intake with, but I am talking, or slang for food for that matter, but no, I am talking about the bootloader of the gods, grub, the grand unified bootloader. This, I'm excited to talk about grub, because grub is just awesome, and I hope that you find grub as awesome as I do, because it is fun, it is exciting, and it is just all around goodness wrapped up in a little bootloader. Now, a lot of my information was culled from the very informative, very useful grub manual, which can be found on the grub website, which is very easy to access at www.gnu.org/software/grub. That's off the GNU website. And grub is a application under the GNU public license. It is currently on version 0.97, which is the version that most distributions install with. And, you know, one of the things that's really cool, and you probably take for granted, is that when you run your OS, you're actually running two kind of systems there. I mean, well, three, if you could say. You got the BIOS, which loads in, which kicks off the boot process, bootloader, which isn't part of the operating system, so to speak. It's its own little, consider, operating system. And no other bootloader have I seen other than grub really exemplifies this, and we'll get to that in a few moments. And then your bootloader, in this case grub, will kick off the loading of your operating system of choice. Now, what's really cool about grub is not only do you get to set it up, but you can also configure it on the fly. Unlike Lilo, the Linux loader, which I talked about last time, you install the Linux loader and you hope it, you know, you got everything right for the next time you try and boot. Grub, on the other hand, is not that limited. If something's wrong, Grub has essentially three modes. There's a menu mode, which is what most people will see when they boot Grub, if they see Grub at all, which provides you a list of definitions, OS definitions that you can boot. There is the edit mode, where when you're in the menu mode, you can press the E button and begin to edit any one of those definitions. Or there is the command line mode, which allows you to just access the grub command line mode, and you could do a whole lot more on the command line mode, which we'll get into shortly. Now, grub has supplanted Lilo as the main Linux bootloader of choice for most distributions. Now, I do believe Slackware is one of the few that are left that uses Lilo to this day as the default bootloader. Arch Linux gives you a choice, and so does Gentoo give you a choice when you're installing the operating system as to which bootloader you want to use. Now, if you are at all hesitant, you know, you might be familiar with Lilo, very, very familiar with Lilo. Hopefully after this, you will elect to choose to install Grub as your default bootloader for any operating system that you want to run. It is that awesome. Now, most people are not going to have to worry about installing Grub, pulling down the sources or building Grub yourself, or unless you're, again, running Arch or Gentoo, you probably won't even be asked what loader you want to run. You'll be asked, do you want to install it in the master boot record or in the boot partition of your root partition. Given that, I'm not really going to go into the details of installing Grub from source. You can get that from the documentation. Most people will not have to do that. But given that, when you install your distribution of choice, and you go through and it prepares to install the bootloader, unlike Lilo, or some other bootloaders, you don't really have to have much configured for Grub when you run the Grub install. Now, there are a few configuration files, and if you read the documentation, it's, of course, the documentation tries to be operating system agnostic, but we're going to be focusing on documentation for Linux or GNU Linux. And where the majority of distributions install Grub and its configuration files will be found in the /boot/grub directory. You will also find grub commands in the /sbin or /usr/sbin because they're more system specific and as opposed to general user commands. They're more for administration. Now, in the boot grub directory, typical files that you will find in there are a menu.list, or it's menu.lst, which is a general configuration file, and it holds the definitions for the operating systems that you're going to boot. Additionally, what you will find in there are the stage files for Grub. Now, Grub boots itself with at least 2 stage files. The first stage 1 file is simply put in the master boot record or boot sector of the partition that you have installed Grub on. The purpose of stage 1 is to load either stage 1.5 or stage 2. Essentially what stage 1 does is it sets itself up to encode the location of stage 1.5 or stage 2 into the master boot record so it can kick it off. Now, stage 1.5 files, generally optional, but you're going to find them on a Linux distribution, is what Grub needs to read a file system. You'll see an EX2, Riser file system, XFS file system. You will see multiple different types of stages for being able to read a file system type. And stage 1.5 is usually installed pulled in right after the master boot record. So stage 1 kicks off stage 1.5. If no stage 1.5 is available, it tries to just go right for stage 2, which is the core Grub image, which will pull off the file system where Grub was installed, will pull out what it needs to set up the bootloader and begin to boot your operating system of choice. Now, a few other files that might be in there is a default file, which specifies the default image or definition of boot, which we'll get to later. Also, you will find in there other stages, like a stage 2 El Torito, and that's used for creating bootable CD-ROMs, an NB grub, which is a network boot grub image, and a PXC grub, which is a network boot image for using pre-boot execution environments. Now, we are not going to cover network booting with Grub or creating a bootable CD in this episode today. Don't want to make it too long. Additionally, we're just more interested in regular Linux systems. That's a more advanced topic. Your version of Grub that included with your distribution may not have Grub compiled with the network booting option. So we're going to stick with the basics for today, the plain vanilla Grub. Now, as I said, you're probably not going to need to install Grub yourself, but just to keep it in the back of your mind, there are 2 basic ways to install Grub once you have the software installed on your system, of course. There is the native, which is using a Grub boot disk, and using a program called Grub Install right inside of Linux. The native involves creating a Grub boot disk and using the Grub interface to set up and install Grub. Now, while they consider this the safer way to install Grub, the safest way, it is also the most difficult way to install Grub. And we're not going to go into too many details in here. Suffice to say that if you really want to figure out how to do that, read the documentation. We're going to talk about the Grub install because it's easier, of course, translates better to describing that. And I've never had a problem running it. So it's not that risky, I don't think, any more than any other piece of software you're installing on your system. Anyway, in the Grub install, essentially you run Grub install and you pass the device name, either a Linux device or a Grub device, as an option. So, for instance, you would put in grub-install, then space /dev/HDA, which would install grub into the master boot record of the first IDE disk on your system. Now, we're talking about Linux device naming here, not BSD, not grub device naming, which I'll cover in a minute, but Linux device naming. So if you had a SCSI drive in there and you wanted to install it on the master boot record of the SCSI drive, it'd be grub-install /dev/SDA for your first SCSI device or whatever device you want. Now, additionally, if you wanted to put it into the root or boot partition, you would specify the partition your root or boot partition is on. So it'd be grub-install/dev/HDA 1, for example, which would be the first partition on hard drive A1. All right. Now, you can optionally specify the grub device. Now, an example of this would be grub-install space open parenthesis HD0 close parenthesis, which would be the first or the master boot record on the first hard disk. All right. Now, in addition to, and I'm going to cover the grub device naming in just a second, but bear with me. In addition to running, you know, specifying the device that you want to install on, you may need to specify where the images are stored. For instance, grub install /root-directory=/boot/grub would say, and then /dev/HDA would say, all right, install grub into the master boot record. The root directory for grub is going to be under the /boot/grub directory, as that's where you're going to find the images that you need to kick off to perform the rest of the install. All right. Now, let's get into grub device naming, because it's a little different than what most people are probably used to, and might throw you at first as you're reading through the grub documentation. For specifying a device in grub, you put the device inside parentheses, okay? And you're basically going to be using two types of devices, hard drives or floppy drives. There's also CD drives there too, but we're looking at block drives and floppy drives in a sense. So the standard naming convention for any like hard drive, SCSI, CD-ROM drive, hard drive, flash drive, any drive, block device, is HD. Okay, so HD plus the number, a comma, and then another number. Okay, the first number is the device. The second number is the partition on a device. For instance, you have a hard drive in your computer, ID hard drive or SCSI hard drive. You want to install grub, or you're going to be looking at the first drive. Okay, it's going to be HD0 inside of parentheses. If you want to look at the first partition, it's HD0, comma, 0 inside of parentheses. Now, I don't know if you caught this. I said the first partition, the first device, I gave them both the label as 0. That's because grub's naming or numbering starts with 0. So 0 is the first device or partition, 1 is the second device or partition, and so on. So think of it different than Linux naming, which does like HDA, A alphabetical letter A for first, and then a number for the partition number 1. HDA would be equivalent to HD0. HDA1 would be equivalent to HD0, 0. All right? In addition to that, floppy drives follow the same kind of naming convention. Generally, you're not going to specify a partition on a floppy drive, so you're just looking at like FD0 for floppy drive 1, FD1, so on. Now, interestingly, there's another way that you can specify a device, and that is using hexadecimal or decimal number of the BIOS drive, or how it's specified in the drive. For instance, on my EEE PC, they have grub set up to look at the device 0x80. And what that means is 0x80 is a hard disk, just like HD. It's a hard disk 1. 0x81 would be hard drive 2 or hard disk 2. And again, it does not matter whether we're talking about a flash drive, flash device, any block device, 0x81 or 0. Floppy drives are just specified with a zero. So floppy 1 is 0, floppy 2 is 1, floppy 3 is 2. You get the idea. So that is, excuse me there, that is how you Grub does its device naming. And it's important to know that because you need that in the configuration file, and you need that for running the command line. Now, what's cool about Grub, again, when we get talking about the command line, is it has tab completion. So you can use the Grub command line to figure out what devices that you have in a system. So if you were to sit down right now, okay, and you were to open up a terminal, and you were going to fire up Grub, okay, which is now more than likely you not going to have it in your path because it is in the I believe user Espen directory, user Espen. If you were to fire that up and type in root and hit tab, or open parentheses, hit root, open parentheses, and tab, and it would start to autofill in for you, just like tab completion on the command line. So root, open parentheses, tab will fill in the devices that are able to be set as a block device by the root command. It'll show you. Now, for instance, when I do it on my EEE PC, root, open space, open parentheses, tab, it does HD0, comma, 0. Same thing as 0x80, okay? That's the flash device that I'm able to boot from on here. Now, if you're in Grub right now, you want to just, you know, hit enter or backspace over what you just typed in and hit quit to get out of the command line, Grub command line, okay? Now, so you got Grub installed and you're all ready to rock and roll with it, and let's talk about the one configuration file, probably the main one, that you might be most interested in, and that's the menu.lst file. The menu.lst file, the general configuration for Grub, is where you specify your operating system definitions. Similar to Lilo, Grub is set up with two main sections. There's the general selection section at the top, the first part of the file, and then there's your OS or your definitions section, which is the second part of the file. Now, in the menu.lst, again, keep in the back of your mind when we're talking about particularly devices and just about anything, Grub uses 0 as the first device definition or whatever, 1 as the second. That's important. Always start your numbering with 0. Work from there. Now, in the general settings, the first section, Grub device naming, let's say section 0, all right, you have the default, you have different commands you can put in there. For instance, you can put in default and then the default definition to use at boot. Remember, again, starts with 0. So if you set default to 0, it looks at the first definition. Default to 1 looks for the second definition, okay, and so on. You can put a command in there called timeout. Timeout is the number of seconds before the default definition is loaded. Now, if you didn't specify a default, or you look in your Grub menu.lst file and don't see a default in there, that just means the default is set to the first definition, 0, definition number 0. So the timeout will show the menu, the Grub menu, for the specified number of seconds, and if nothing is done, no intervention, it'll just kick off the boot process and begin booting that first default device, or I'm sorry, definition right there. Simple enough. Just like Lilo, but it doesn't specify in tenth of a second like Lilo does. It specifies it in seconds, so keep that in mind too. If you specify a timeout as 50, it's going to wait 50 seconds, not 50 microseconds, I believe is what Lilo uses. So you want to set it to 5 for 5 seconds. Some other things that you can specify in there, which we'll get to in a few minutes, is called a fallback. A fallback definition is used as a safety gap. In case your first definition doesn't work, you can specify one or more fallback definitions, which we'll cover in a few minutes. You can change the color of the menu and the text and highlighting with the color command. The color command takes two parameters, the normal and highlight, which essentially equates to foreground and background color. Now, look at, see the documentation for the list of colors available, but be aware that only 8 of the 16 colors that are available can be used for the background. Foreground can have any of the 16 colors, but the background can only consist of black, blue, green, cyan, red, magenta, brown, or light gray. You cannot have a yellow background. I don't know why, but you just can't. Now, you can have a yellow foreground on a green, but you can't have a green background foreground on a yellow. That's just a limitation of it, but beware of your color choices here so you don't end up not being able to see anything or puking when you look at it. Of course, you can always change those on the fly with the grub command when you're booting, which we'll cover in a few minutes. After the general configuration, in the menu.lst file, you have the OS definitions. This is where you specify the definitions that the operating systems that you want to boot. Simple enough. First line in your OS definition, title. So title, space, equals, space, and the name of the OS. Be descriptive. For instance, Slackware 2.6.22 kernel. You can have spaces in there, punctuation in there, stuff like that. This is just an informative title for the kernel. Now, I have seen, in specifying in the configuration, I have seen that it is... When you specify in the menu.list, I've seen them both use equals, like default equals something, or not using an equals, so it would be like root and specifying the root information. It seems kind of arbitrary as to whether or not you need to specify an equals there or not, but just be aware of that. It seems you can get away without specifying the equals. You might hear me say equals, just for, you know, making it a little clearer that you're setting the value of this. Okay, so title is the name for the definition. After title, on a new line, root, and specify the root partition to boot. Now, this must conform to the device naming structure. Okay, for instance, root space parentheses HD0 comma 0 close parentheses is disk 1 partition 1. Just remember that 0 is 1, 1 is 2, and so on. Next line would be kernel, and you're going to specify the full path to the kernel on your root partition. Now, for example, on mine, it would be kernel space slash boot slash and a kernel name. Now, in addition to that, you can pass any other kernel parameters that you want to at this point. Just like in Lilo, you can specify specific kernel parameters. This is where you would add them to the line right after the kernel image. Following the kernel image, you're probably going to want to have your initrd or your initializing RAM disk image. So it's initrd space, then the path to the initrd image. Example, initrd space slash boot slash initramfs-eeepc.img for the initramd image. That's simple. That's all you need after that, at which point you can boot just about any Linux system using those commands. Now, there's another option that you might need in there for different operating systems, which is the chain loader. It loads a file as a chain loader, and it's used primarily for non-multi-boot OS operating systems like Windows or DOS, or operating systems with faulty bootloaders like SCO Unix 7. Ah, crap, I forget the name of it. Anyway, we'll cover chain loading in a few minutes, but title, root, kernel, initrd. Essentially, that's all you need. Okay? So, you got your menu.list. You got everything set up. Grub's installed. And again, I recommend installing it in the master boot record like Lilo, unless you have certain, you know, requirements or specifics, you know, that meet your cases. I've never had a problem installing a bootloader in a master boot record. Contrary to how many people or how much documentation will hem and haw and say, oh, it's risky, risky, you might not want to do this, I've never had a problem. I think it's the easiest way to go. Especially when you're using the bootloader of the God's Grub. What else could you want? I think what really makes Grub cool, as compared to a lot of the other bootloaders I've used, is when you're using it on boot. When you boot it up, more than likely, most systems, you're going to come right into the grub menu. It's going to list your OS definitions, and it'll give you some other text in there, like, you know, highlight a definition using, you know, the arrow keys, and press E if you want to, you know, enter if you want to boot it, E if you want to edit, or press C for the command line. Now, as you do that, so simple enough. Let's talk about editing an item in the list, in the menu list. Okay, so you boot up Grub, your definition's right there, your OS. You click the E button. You are going to be presented with the syntax for that definition. You can then proceed to edit any one of those lines by moving the arrow key and pressing the E button to edit that line. You'll be given that line, and you can use basic bash movement on there, Control-B to go to the front of the line, Control-E to the end of the line, and so forth. You can use the arrow keys to move back and forth. You can add stuff, delete stuff on that line, and when you're finished, you simply press Enter, and it writes it back there. Now, let's say you wanted to add an additional line. You go to the line above the line you want to add, where you want to add the new line, and you press the O key, and it's going to add another line after the current line that you're on. Say you want to delete a line, okay? You're on a line, press the D, and it will delete the line. Now, when you're finished with all your changes, you simply press the B button to boot that definition. Now, say you don't want to keep your changes. That's fine, too. Hit the Escape button, and it's going to return you back to the menu and ignore all the changes that you made. You're good to go. Now, the next thing that you could do, aside from editing a definition, is go into the command line mode. Now, command line mode is the same thing as the Grub command line mode when you're in your operating system and typing Grub. You could do some really cool stuff on here. You can, this is where you will be taken to if you boot Grub without a menu.lst file. And you can specify all these exact commands that you find in a menu.lst file on the command mode and a whole bunch more. In the command mode, which is entered by hitting C at the menu list, or if you don't have a menu list defined, you type C, and it will bring you in command mode, and you can type help, and it will list all the commands that you want to do. And what command line mode allows you to do in there is, like, it allows you to, in a sense, you know, write your own definition if you really wanted to and do some other stuff. You can browse your file system so long as it can recognize the file systems that you want to browse. It has the stage files for it. For instance, to browse my root file system, which is on the first hard drive, which is a SCSI drive on my laptop because it's a SATA drive, SDA partition 1, I would type root space open parentheses 0, 0, close parentheses, and hit enter. At which point then I can use the cat command, concatenate, or the CD to change directories, and I can move into that file system, which is really cool. And then I can cat files in there. And I can view the entire contents of the file system, text files and everything, just by, you know, attempting to mount these partitions and moving into them through Grub's command line interface. And you might say, oh my God, what about security? And, you know, that means anybody can look at the contents of the file in here. Yeah, but we'll talk about some of the things you could do to protect from that happening, okay? So the command line is really cool. If you're in a command line, you can press Escape key to return back to the menu, just like you could in edit mode. Now, what's cool about these capabilities is, let's say you screw up and you messed up your boot process. If you're using Arch Linux and you're using Lilo and you boot your system and you forgot to run Lilo after you update the kernel, you're kind of screwed. All right, you can end up with an unbootable system. Let's say you're testing a kernel out and you add another definition. You want to boot that kernel and you messed up on the syntax. You can easily correct it on the command line right there through the edit mode or through the command line mode, and you're back up to running again in no time. It's not as limited as Lilo, whereas if you screw something up, you better have a boot disk handy or a rescue CD, because you're going back to the end of the bus, Jack. Starting all over again. Anyway, that's handiness of Grub right there as a rescue situation when you screw up. on that note, I always recommend having a backup kernel, whatever bootloader you use, that you know will work and that is good. And we're going to cover that in a few minutes, too, some other things that you can do. But keep that in the back of your mind, you know, because if you upgrade something or messing around, always have a kernel that you know you can boot and it works right. Anyway, because of the power and capabilities of Grub allowing you to access your file system, you might want to say to yourself, how am I going to protect my file system or protect, you know, from people snooping around? Well, Grub does offer some password protection in there. And you have two possibilities of protecting. You have one is protection from editing or entering the command line mode. And two is protection from booting. You can prevent them from being able to boot a definition or all definitions, for that matter, unless it provides the password. Protecting from editing, what you need to do is you need to use the password command in your menu list. In the general section of the configuration, you put in the password, you put the word password, and then either the password in plain text or the MD5 hash of the password. And in addition to that, you can specify a configuration file to load as like an admin configuration file in addition to the standard configuration file. So if they type in the correct password, it would load a different configuration file with different options that they have in there. Anyway, Grub provides you an easy way to convert your password into an MD5 hash. If you type in on your command line or in the terminal, grub-md5-crypt, it will ask you for a password. You know, just like using the password command, you type in your password, it'll ask you for it again, it'll type it in, and it'll output an MD5 hashed version of that password. Additionally, you can just type MD5 crypt from the Grub command line to get the MD5 version of the password. Very simple. You add that to the general configuration file, and then when you boot the system up, and if they want to edit the command line mode or edit mode, they have to first hit the P key, and you're prompted for the password. Enter the password, and then it'll let them in. If they don't enter the right password, no entry, no lucky, they're locked out. Additionally, you can prevent people from booting certain definitions or all definitions by adding the word lock to after each title of the definition. That's it. You have to set it up like you're editing for the command line, or, you know, you have to put the password in the general configuration, but you put lock down after the title on each definition, and if they try or an attempt to boot that definition, they will be prompted to enter the password first. Okay, now, let's talk about some fallbacks here and stuff like that you can secure yourself when you're doing some testing of kernels that you've compiled yourself or whatever you're doing. You can do a boot once only, which will attempt to boot the system using a different definition that you specify, and if it fails, it will fall back to your default specification. That's simple. It's good for testing a kernel. And what you do is you add this line to the general configuration section of the menu.lst. You add default space saved. Now, that tells Grub to read a file called default in the /boot/grub directory, which specifies what definition to use to boot for the first time. Okay? Now, you add your new definition after your good definition, and after the good definition, before the new one, the last line that you add after everything to boot is save default, all one word, SAVEDEFAULT. Then, after the new test definition, you add the line saved default, SAVEDEFAULT, all one word, space zero. Now, what that does is when you boot the first definition, it saves that definition list, the zero, what it is, to the default file. Under /boot/grub default, it saves zero on there because it's the first definition. If you boot the first definition or the first definition, the test one, okay, what that does, because this is a boot only, is it attempts to boot that, and it writes right directly after it attempts, as it's attempting to boot, it writes to that file, save default to default file 0 so that the next time Grub runs, it attempts the boot. It looks at the save default and boots the first or good definition on there. Okay, so if something happens and it doesn't boot properly, you can reboot the machine and it would just automatically put you back into your main one by default. Again, remember, 0 is 1. Any other number is 1 less. So 0 is 1, 1 is 2, so forth. Now, after you're done editing your menu.lst file, you save it, then you need to run this command on the command line. /sbin/grub-set-default(1). Now that puts a 1 in the boot slash grub slash default file. It tells that when grub goes to boot next time to try and boot the first definition automatically. The second definition, not the first one, definition number 1, second definition. When that runs, it sets the default back to 0 afterwards, and that way you can get right back in your system no problem because you have a good definition. Now, you have the option of providing fallback definitions to grub. Fallback definitions will keep trying to boot the fallbacks in succession until one is successful. Once it finds a successful one, it's going to save that to the default file, what definition that is. So every time after there, it will just boot the successful one until you go back in and fix it. So, like the boot once only, you're going to still need to put in the default space saved in the general configuration. Then after that, you specify the line fallback, all one word, fallback, space, and then each fallback definition that you want to use with a space after them. So like fallback space 1 space 2 would go fallback definition 2, then the definition 3 if the first default definition fails. It will try 1. If that succeeds, it will boot the second definition. It will then try the third definition if the second definition fails. And then after each definition that you specify, you add the line save default space fallback. So it's save default, all one word, space fallback, all one word. So what happens then is it will try each definition you have specified in the fallback. Once it finds one that will boot successfully, it'll save that that definition, you know, the fallback. It'll save the next number, or the next number if it wasn't successful, it'll keep going to the next one. Okay? System will try each fallback in succession until successful boot, then save the successful one to the default file. Simple enough. Now, neither one of these sections is going to help solve a problem of where the kernel actually does boot but fails after that. Like, for instance, you didn't provide an initrd file, so it can't find or read the file system partition where your root partition is. It can't read that partition. That's not going to help you out here. Okay, you're still going to end up, you know, the grub is successfully booted your kernel, and that's all that it does. In such a case, again, you might need to remember you should have a fallback default kernel that you can boot to that works, that's successful. So in your list of fallbacks, you know, you might have to manually go down and specify that one backup kernel that you have that always works, because your other kernels may fall back to a success but fail during the boot process. Understand what I'm saying, Jack? Of course you do, because you're smart. If you weren't smart, you wouldn't be listening. I want to wrap this up by covering some additional commands that you can use in the menu list or command line or editing mode. When I talk about a command, I'll explain briefly what it does. I'll tell you where it can be used. The hidden command. That is specified in the menu. You can specify in the command, but you know, I don't know why you really want to. What the hidden command does is it hides the grub menu unless the escape key is pressed during the timeout phase. So when your system starts to boot, if you provide the command hidden in there, it will hide the grub menu. So you won't see anything. Even though it does exist, you'd have to press the escape key to get to it. The hide command is in the general section. You would hide in the definition section. You would hide a partition from booting from the booting OS. Now, this is primarily only useful for DOS or Windows, so you would hide, and then the device name of the partition you want to hide. Like, for instance, if you had a primary partition that had Linux installed, and then your second primary partition had Windows installed, you would hide the first primary partition from Windows so that it would think it's on the primary partition, because Windows and DOS want to be on the primary partition. First primary partition. Subsequently, you can use the unhide command to unhide a partition. That's used in the menu. You could use them on the command line, too, if you're booting from command or in the edit mode. Boot is basically used for command line or editing a menu entry. You would type in boot, and it would attempt to boot everything that you have specified. The cat command is primarily used in the command line mode, which will list the contents of a file. So, as I said before, you can browse to a file on the file system on the partition and type in cat, for instance, cat slash etsy slash fstab, which are your fstab file. Chain loader. I briefly mentioned chain loader when booting other operating systems. Chain loader loads a file as a chain loader, and it can use the block list notation. Now, block list notation, block list is a file that does not appear in the file system. An example of this is like the Windows bootloader would appear in the block one of the device, not block zero, which is the master boot record, but might appear in block one. So you would specify to the chain loader space plus one when you're trying to boot the operating system Windows, and it would try to load the file in the first block of the partition. Block number one, actually, not block zero, but block number one, and hopefully it'll work. It's used for OSs with a defective bootloader or for booting Windows and DOS, which maybe they have a defective bootloader too, I don't know. Find command is pretty simple. Find command will start shooting, find, and then the name of the file you want found will search for the file in all the mountable partitions, just like a regular file command, and it will display the full path to the file that it finds. Halt command is used in command line mode, is used to halt the system. Again, I had briefly mentioned help, which will display a list of all the commands, and if you type in help in the command name, it will display the list for that help file. Pause is used in the menu. You can provide some text after the pause, and it would display that text, and it would wait for a prompt from the user to press any key to continue on. You wouldn't really use that in command or edit mode. It wouldn't make any sense. Quit is used in command line mode. Quit will exit the command line or edit mode and go back to the main menu mode. Reboot is used in the command line mode, again, which will reboot the system. Now, the root command, which I briefly mentioned before, it will set the device to root and attempt to mount and get the information of the device. So if you type in root space parenthesis HD 0, comma 0, it will attempt to set the root device to the first partition on the first drive. And then you can CD into it or cat into it by specifying the device and then slash and the path. You could also use the command root no verify, all one word, which will attempt to mount the root. It will set the root device, but not attempt to mount it. Well, I hope that this little introduction to Grub has been informative. So the next time you are booting your Linux machine because it's a laptop and you didn't want to waste the battery transporting it to work because, you know, Linux machines don't really need to be rebooted that much. And if you're rebooting it on a regular basis, gotta ask yourself why. Anyway, so you're booting, you know, your system, and you pop up to the Grub menu. Take a minute to pause and stop and check it out and see what you can do and have fun with it. Unless you read these commands that we're talking about, your chances are you're not going to break anything, but you're going to have learn something new and have fun doing it. As always, remember, Hacker Public Radio is community-sponsored, community-driven. If you are interested in educating people on a subject that you're pretty familiar with, or you want to learn a subject you're not familiar with and then educate people, get in touch with the Hacker Public Radio crew off the website. And, make an episode or two. We're always looking for people. And if you have any questions, comments, you can send your email to Dan, D-A-N-N, @thelinuxlink.net, or I'll check out the comment section for this episode. I thank you very much. I hope to have another episode out very soon. I think the next one's going to talk about options that you can pass to the kernel when you're booting, or who the hell knows what it will be, but it'll be something to do with the Linux boot up and startup process. Again, thank you very much, and you have a wonderful, happy hacking day.
Thank you for listening to Hacker Public Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.